I'm a cosmologist.
What's that?
I study the marriage of space and time.
The perfect couple.
It's called motor neuron disease. Life expectancy is 2 years.
He has pneumonia.
The only way he will survive would be to give him a tracheotomy. He will never speak again.
Yes, he will.
My name is Stephen Hawking.
It's American.
Is that a problem?
Hi everybody, and welcome to another 10 Minutes Movie Review. Today I'm talking about The Theory of Everything, which means that it's not quite spoiler-free, because this is the picture, not so much a biopic of the famous Professor Stephen Hawking, but of his marriage to his first wife, Jane Wilde Hawking, told very much from her perspective. And if you've heard a lot about this film, it's because the two lead actors, Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones, have been nominated for many awards. The film's also drawn comparison with another British film about a famous scientist, Alan Turing, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, in a movie called The Imitation Game. I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on this week. But I think it's interesting that both of these films about very unconventional men have been given a rather technically conventional film treatment. And if you like and respond to either of these films, it has to be because of the performances. Because really, from a formal movie-making point of view, these are deeply banal films. Well shot, well acted, well staged, and all that kind of thing. But no real attempt to take us into their interior life, and no real attempt to really get to grips with the science. I mean, in fairness, I'm guessing in the case of Stephen Hawking, as many of us bought his book, A Brief History of Time, in our millions, how many of us truly read all of it, or at least understood even half of it? So maybe it's a losing battle. Anyway, The Theory of Everything, effectively, it's, as I said, the conventional story of a marriage. It starts off in Cambridge University in the 1960s. The bright young things meet, Stephen and Jane. They quickly hit it off, even though he's a little bit geeky and weird. And almost simultaneous with their courtship is the discovery of his illness, that he suffers from motor neurone disease, and that at the time he was given a prognosis of 2 years to live, and a very hard 2 years, a 2 years in which the brain centre that sends signals to his muscles would fail, and therefore he would lose control of his limbs, his speech, everything really, apart from his power of thought and his ability to father children. It stands as a great testament to Jane's inner strength that she stood by him during this, and indeed was determined to get the most out of whatever time they had together. She nursed him and very much put her own life on hold, her own intellectual life certainly. And so what develops is a very sort of uneven and unconventional marriage as his career takes off and he gains more fame and yet not much money. Remember, this is the British university system where you don't necessarily earn the big bucks of the American university system. And so money is very tight. And you therefore stretch the marriage out in sort of a ménage à trois, because Jane, who is religious in contrast to Stephen's atheism, meets at her church choir the choir master, who is a widow, very caring, lovely chap. He almost becomes a sort of a surrogate husband for Jane, going with the kids camping and doing all the stuff an able-bodied husband would do. And evidently they develop feelings for each other. But then Stephen also develops, and, you know, as his disease takes hold, he has to go through a tracheotomy, which means he can't speak. And this is before he's given that computer interface that gives us the voice that with the American accent that many of us associate with Stephen Hawking today. And through that, he meets his physical therapist, Eileen. And evidently he falls for Eileen, who will become his second partner in life. So what's interesting is that you have these two people going through this very hard time, growing not necessarily apart, I mean, evidently still very fond of each other and good friends, but needing different things from life. And so they each eventually come to be with somebody else. I think what I find problematic about this film is that there is literally no dark backing to the mirror. This is a story about four people who are essentially good. And they are surrounded by people who are essentially good and well-meaning and earnest. And when both Stephen and Jane fall for other people, we totally understand why. And they do so in the most English and restrained and friendly and kind of ways. They don't resent each other for it. There are a few mildly shed tears, but no grand histrionics. It's all played so nicely and neatly. There's a scene in this film where Jane's mother advises her to join the church choir as a means of therapy and end of depression and just claiming some time back for herself. And Jane says to her, well, that may be the most English thing anyone has ever said. And I think this film is the most English film. It's so genteel and bourgeois and, oh, just lacking in any kind of teeth. It didn't affect me emotionally at all. It just struck me as incredibly mawkish and, oh, I don't know, just dull, dull, dull. I don't need to spend my time with these people. There's no attempt to show really, truly the genius of Stephen or to sort of visually take us into his world. There's one small scene on a beach, I think it was, where they sort of tilt the lens so you see what life might be like holding your head at that angle that Stephen Hawking holds his head at. But come on, take us into his world in the way that the diving bell and the butterfly did. If you don't do that, we've just got a Hallmark Channel movie of the afternoon. And I'm sorry, that's all this film is. I do not understand why it's getting such praise. I think it's the old Hollywood Academy Award snake pit of giving any actor an award who physically contorts themselves or dons, you know, uglies up with heavy prosthetics. And yes, this is a physically, technically brilliant performance from Eddie Redmayne to show the gradual stages of Stephen's physical decline. But this is not a film. These are not really, truly, to my mind, performances that are affecting, that are praiseworthy. And I think it's just rather embarrassing, frankly, the hoopla this film has received. So, you know, I really do hate to give very bad reviews, and I suspect that it will have absolutely no impact on the great critical and commercial success of this film. If I suspect I'm also going to be very much in the minority, so if you do in fact agree or indeed disagree with me, please feel free to leave a comment on the blog at beena007.com. And in the meantime, the release information, etc., will be after the outro music.
It has been a great joy to watch this man defy every expectation, both scientific and personal.
There should be no boundary to human endeavor. However bad life may seem, while there is life, there is hope.
Thank you.
Sorry, did you say something?
I said, thank you.
The Theory of Everything has a running time of 123 minutes and is rated PG-13. The movie played Toronto 2014 and was released last year in the USA, Cambodia, Hong Kong, Taiwan, South Korea, Austria, Germany, Israel and Uruguay. It opened this weekend in the UK and Ireland. It opens in many other countries over the following months. The full release information can be found at the full written review at www.beena007.com. Thank you for listening.